Lyapnik had been ripped away, leaving her in her long-sleeved shift, her kerchief gone, her hair falling about her face. She was barely aware of it. She was locked in a single memory, the impact of a club, a blade, the shock that ran through her own body. Salafi, mother of God, Salafi. As the mob raged, all she could see was the horse lying in the snow, all the love and the grace and the strength broken and muddied and stilled. More people were tearing at her clothes. She knocked one groping hand aside, and a fish-smelling fist struck her across the face, bringing her teeth together. Pain like stars exploded on her mouth. The neck of her shift tore. Constantine's even voice remonstrated, too late, with the crowd. They drew back, a little chastened. Still, they dragged her downhill. All around was torchlight, throwing sparks across her sight. "Finally frightened," Constantine murmured to her under his breath, his eyes bright, as though he had bested her at some sport. She hurled herself at him a second time in a rush of rage that swallowed up her pain. Perhaps she was trying to get them to kill her. They nearly did. Constantine let the crowd punish her. A gray fog slipped slyly over her sight, but still, she did not die. And when she came back to herself, she realized that they had borne her past the gates of the Kremlin. Now they were in the Posad, the part of Moscow that lay outside the walls. Still hurrying, they were going down to the river. A little chapel loomed up. They paused there for a swift debate. Constantine spoke, though she caught only a word here and there. "Witch! Holy Father! Bring wood!" She wasn't really listening. Her senses were numb. They had not harmed her sister. They had not harmed Maria. Her horse was dead. She cared not what they did with her. She did not care for anything. She felt the change in the air when she was thrust from the beating, insistent torchlight into the darkness of a candlelit chapel. She tumbled to the floor not far from the iconostasis, jarring her torn mouth. There she lay, breathing the smell of dusty wood, passive with shock. Then she thought that she might try to rise at least, stand with a little courage, a little pride. Salovey would have. Salovey. She dragged herself to her feet and found herself alone and face to face with Konstantin Nikonovich. The priest had his back to the door, half the length of the nave between them. He was watching her. "You killed my horse," she whispered, and he smiled just a little. She had a cut across her nose. One eye was swelling shut. In the half-light of the chapel, her bruised face looked more unearthly than ever, and more vulnerable. The old desire flared, and the accompanying self-hatred. But why should he be ashamed? God cared not for men and women. All that mattered was his own will, and she was in his power. The thought heated his blood, as much as the worship of the crowd outside. His eyes swept her body again. "You have been condemned to die," he told her, "for your sins. You have been granted these few moments to pray." Her face did not change. Perhaps she had not heard. He spoke louder. "It is the law of God and the will of the people whom you have wronged." Her face was salt white, so that each faint freckle stood out on her nose like spots of blood. "Kill me then," she said. "Have the courage to do it yourself, not leave it to a mob and call it justice. Do you deny then that the fire was of your making?" Lightly, he stepped toward her. free, he told himself. Free at last of her power over him. Her expression didn't change. She didn't speak. She didn't move even when he curled his fingers behind the bone of her jaw and lifted her face to his. You cannot deny it, he said, because it is true. She didn't flinch when he pressed his thumb into the bruises blossoming flower-like along her mouth. She barely seemed to see him. She really was ugly. Big eyes, wide mouth, the jutting bones. But he could not look away. He wouldn't ever be able to look away. Not until those eyes closed in death. Perhaps even beyond, she would haunt him. You took all that mattered from me, he said. You cursed me with demons. You deserve death. She made no reply. Tears ran unheeded down her face. In sudden rage, he caught her shoulders, drove her against the iconostasis so that all the saints shook, and pinned her there. The breath left her body. Any vestige of color left her face. His hand closed on her throat, pale and vulnerable, and he found himself breathing fast. Look at me, damn you! Slowly, her eyes focused on his face. Beg for your life, he said. Beg, and perhaps I will grant it you. She shook her head slowly, her eyes dazed and wandering. He felt a surge of hatred. He bent his lips to her ear and whispered in a voice even he hardly recognized. You will die in the fire, Vasilisa Petrovna, and you will scream for me before the end. He kissed her once, hard as a blow, holding her jaw in a vise grip and tasting the blood on her split lip. She bit him, bloodying his mouth in turn. He recoiled, and then they were staring at each other, with a hatred of each mirrored in the other's eyes. God go with you, she whispered, in bitter mockery. Go to the devil, he said, and left her. Silence fell in the dusty chapel after Constantine left. Perhaps they were building a pyre. Perhaps they were readying something worse. Perhaps her brother would come at last, and this nightmare would be over. Vasya didn't care. What had she to fear in dying? Perhaps, beyond life, she would find her father again, her mother, her beloved nurse Dunya. Soloway. But then she thought of fire, of whips and knives and fists. She was not dead yet. She was terrified. Perhaps she could just step away, walk into the gray forest, beyond life, and be gone. Death was someone she knew. Morosko, Vasya whispered, and then his older name, the name of the death god, Karachun. No answer. Winter was over. He had faded away from the world of men. Shivering, she sank to the floor, leaned against the iconostasis. Outside, people shouted, laughed, swore. But in that chapel, there was only the silence of the saints in the icon screen, staring steadily down. Vasya could not bring herself to pray. Instead, she tipped her aching head back and shut her eyes, measuring out her life in heartbeats. She could not have slept, not there. Yet somehow the world faded away, and she found herself walking once more in the black forest beneath a starry sky. She knew a dim, shocked relief. It was over. God had heard her plea. This was what she longed for. She stumbled forward, calling. Father, she cried. Mother, Dunya, Soloway, Soloway! Surely he would be here. Surely he had waited for her, if he could. Morosko would know. But Morosko wasn't there. Only silence met her cry. She struggled on, scrabbling, but her limbs were so heavy and her ribs hurt worse and worse with every breath. Vasya! He called her name twice before she heard. Vasya! She tripped and fell before she could turn, found herself kneeling in the snow without the strength to rise. The sky was a river of stars, but she didn't look up. The deaf god was the only thing she could see. He was little more than a confluence of light and dark, wispy as cloud across the moon. But she knew his eyes. He was waiting for her in the gray forest. She was not alone. Between gasps, she managed, "Where is Solovey?"
"Gone," he said. There was no comfort in the death god, not here. There was only the knowledge of her loss, echoed in his pale eyes.
She did not know such a sound of agony could come from her throat. Mastering it, she whispered, "Please, take me with you. They are going to kill me tonight, and I do not..."
"No," he said.
The faintest of pine-tinged breezes seemed to touch her bruised face. He wore his indifference like armor, but it was wavering.
"Vasya, I..." "Please," she said.
"They killed my horse. There is only the fire now." He reached out to her, just as she reached back, through whatever memory or illusion or walls divided them. But it was like touching a wisp of mist.
"Listen to me," he said, mastering himself. "Listen."
She lifted her head with effort. Why listen? Why couldn't she just go? But the bonds of her body called her. She could not win free. The faces of the icons seemed to be trying to break in upon her sight and come between them.
"I wasn't strong enough," he said. "I have done what I could. I hope it may be enough. You won't see me again, but you will live. You must live."
"What?" she whispered. "How? Why? I'm about to..." But icons were thrusting themselves before her eyes, more real than the faint death god.
"Live," he said to her again.
And then he was gone a second time. She was awake, alone, lying on the cold, dusty floor of a church, still, horribly, alive. Alone, save for Konstantin Nikonovich. He was saying over her head,
"Get up! You have missed your chance to pray."
Her hands were roughly bound behind her back. A few men came up at Constantine's beck and made a square around her. They weren't anything like soldiers. They were peasants or tradesmen, ruddy and determined. One held an axe, another a scythe. Constantine's face was white and set. Their eyes met once in a look of pure violence. Before he looked away, serene, his lips set in the austere lines of a man doing his duty to his faith. The crowd was thick about the chapel, lining the road that wound down to the river. They had torches in their hands. They smelled like cooking and char and old wounds and sweat. The nighttime wind scoured her skin. They took away her shoes for penitence, they said. Her feet scraped and throbbed on the snow. Triumph in their faces. Naked worship of the priest. Naked hatred of her. They spat on her.
"Witch,"
she heard again and again. "She set fire to the city. Witch." Vasya had never been so frightened. Where was her brother? Perhaps he could not get through the mob. Perhaps he feared the people's madness. Perhaps Dmitri thought her life a small price to quiet his raging city. She was prodded forward, stumbling. Constantine walked beside her, head piously bent. The red light of the torches leaped before her eyes and blinded them. "Batyushka," she said. Constantine broke off.
"Beg me now,"
he breathed below the roar of the crowd. She did not speak. She had all she could do to fight the panic that was threatening to madden her. Then she said,
"Not like this. Not in fire."
He shook his head and gave her a half-smile. Quick, almost confiding.
"Why? Did you not condemn Moscow to burn?"
She said nothing.
"The devils whispered," said the priest. "At least I can get some good of your curse. The devils spoke true. They whispered of a maiden with a witch's gifts and a monster all of fire. I didn't even have to lie when I told the people of your crime. You should have thought of that before you cursed me with the ears to hear them."
With visible effort, he turned away from her and resumed his praying. His face was the color of linen, but his steps were steady. He seemed transfixed by the crowd's rage, consumed by what he himself had summoned. Vasya's vision took on a black and white clarity, grim and shocking. The air was cold on her face. Her feet burned as they began to freeze in the snow. Moscow's smoke-tinged air ran quicksilver through her veins, drawn in with each panicked breath. Before her, on the ice of the Moskva, massed a sea of upturned faces, snarling or weeping or merely watching. Down on the river stood a stack of logs, illuminated on all sides with torches, a pyre, hastily constructed, and atop it, stark against the sky, the cage of the condemned, lashed down with many ropes. The crowd made a low, continuous sound now, like the growl of an animal rising.
"Forget the cage," Vasya said to Constantine. "These people will tear me to pieces before I get there."
The look he gave her was almost pitying, and she suddenly understood why he walked beside her, why also he prayed with that calculated grace. This was Lesnaya Zemlya writ large. He had gathered them up in their grief and terror, gathered them into his hand with his golden voice and his golden hair, so that they became a weapon in his grip, a tool of vengeance, and a sop to his pride. They would not attack while he was with her, and he wanted to see her burn. He had been cheated of it, after all, the night before. Always, always, she had underestimated the priest.
"Monster,"
she said, and he almost smiled. Then they were down on the ice itself. A shriek went up like a dozen dying rabbits. The people were pressing close about her now, spitting and striking. Her guards could barely keep them back. A stone came whistling through and cut her cheek, gashed it deep. She put a hand to her face, and blood spilled through her fingers. Dazed now, she twisted her head one more time to look at Moscow. No sign of her brother. But she saw the devils, despite the dark. They were silhouetted atop roofs and walls. Domovie and Varovie and Baniki, the faint house spirits of Moscow. They were there, but what could they do but watch? Cherti are formed of the currents of human life. They ride them, but they do not interfere. Except two. But one was her enemy. The other was far away, made nearly powerless by spring and by her own hand. The most she could hope for from him was a death without agony. She held that hope in a desperate grip as they prodded and shouted and chivied her toward the pyre. Across the ice, through a narrow corridor in the throng, tears poured down her face now from her own helplessness and an involuntary reaction against their hatred. Perhaps there was some justice in it. Again and again, she saw folk limping, burned, with bandages on their arms or faces. "But I did not mean to free the Firebird," she thought. "I did not know what would happen. I did not know." The ice was still hard, as thick as a man was tall, shining in spots where wind or sledges had swept away the snow. It would be a long time still until the river released its bonds. "Will I live to see it?" Vasya wondered. "Will I feel sun on my skin again?" "I think not. I think..." The crowd ebbed and surged around the pyre. Constantine's golden hair turned gray-silver in the torchlight, his face a maelstrom of triumph, anguish, lust. His voice and his presence were undiminished, but now his power was divorced from the restraining impulses of religion. Vasya wished suddenly that she could warn her brother, warn Dmitri. "Sasha, you know what he did to Maria. Do not trust him. Do not..." Then she thought, "Sasha, where are you?" But her brother was not there, and Konstantin Nikonovich was bending his eyes down to hers for the last time. He had won. "What will you say to the god you despise?" Vasya whispered, breathing short and thin with fear. "When you go into the darkness, all men must die." Konstantin only smiled at her again, lifted his hand to make the sign of the cross, raised his deep voice to intone a prayer. The crowd fell silent to hear him. Then he bent forward to whisper in her ear, "There is no God." Then they were dragging her up, and she was struggling like a wild thing in a trap. Pure instinct, but the man was stronger than she was, and her arms were bound. The blood ran down her fingertips where the ropes bit into her thrashing wrists. They forced her up, and Vasya thought, "Mother of God, it is happening." Dying, she thought, ought to bring some sense of completion, of a journey ended. But this was just being caught out of life as she was, with all her sweat and tears and terrors, her wishes and regrets. The cage was small enough that she would have to crouch inside it. A blade at her back prodded her forward. The barred wooden door slammed, was tied securely shut. Vasya's sight fractured with fear. The world became a series of disjointed impressions. The black, firelit mass of the crowd, a last glimpse of sky and memories of her childhood in the forest, of her family, of Solovey. The men were tossing torches onto the wood. Smoke billowed, and then the first log caught, crackling. For an instant, her eyes found the stark white face of Konstantin Nikonovich. He lifted his hand. The hunger, the grief, the joy in his gaze was for her alone. Then a curl of smoke blotted him out. She wrapped both hands around the bars. Splinters stabbed into her fingers. The smoke stung her face and set her coughing. Somewhere dim and far away, she thought she heard hoofbeats, new voices calling. But they were in another world. Her world was made of fire. "Many say, better to die, until the time comes to actually do it," Morozko had told her once. He was right. The heat was already unbearable. But he was nowhere to be seen. There was no refuge for her yet, in the forest beyond life. She couldn't breathe. "My grandmother came to Moscow and never left. Now it is my turn. I am never going to leave this cage. I will be ash on the wind, and I will never see my family again." Rage filled her suddenly. It opened her eyes, sent her back, crouching to her feet. Never? All those hours, those memories stolen by one mad priest who had seen his chance for vengeance and taken it? What'd they say of her one day? She never left. Her tale ended there on the ice. And what of Maria? Brave, doomed Maria. Perhaps Constantine would turn on her next, the witch child who knew his crime. There was no way out. She was crouched on the floor of a locked cage, flames rising all around, burning her already blistered face. There was no way out save by dying. The cage would not break. It was impossible. Impossible. Orozco had said that when she dragged him against hope into the inferno that was Moscow. Magic is forgetting the world was ever other than as you willed it. On a surge of blind will, Vasilisa Petrovna set her hands onto the thick, burning hot bars of her cage and pulled. The heavy wood broke apart. Vasya clung, disbelieving, to the new-made gap. Her vision was graying. The cage smoldered. Beyond hung a curtain of fire. What matter if she'd broken the bars? The fire would take her. If by some miracle it did not, then she'd be torn apart by the crowd. But still, she crawled out of the cage, put her hands, then her face into the fire, got to her feet. An instant she stood there, wavering, beyond fear, untouched by the flames. She'd forgotten they could burn her. And then she leaped down. Down through the flames of her own funeral pyre, she struck the snow and rolled, sweating, sooty, bloody. A soundless cry went up from all the watching Cherti. She was blistered, but not on fire. Alive. Vasya scrambled up, looking wildly about her, but no one cried out. Constantine, everyone, was still watching the fire, as though she had not come hurtling down at all. It was like being a ghost. Was she dead? Had she fallen into another world, like a devil that could not touch the earth, but only live above or beneath it? Dimly, she thought she heard the sound of hoofbeats getting louder, thought she heard a familiar voice shouting her name. But she didn't heed, for a different voice spoke, low and amused, seemingly in her ear. "Well," it said, "I thought I was beyond surprising." And then it laughed. Vasya whipped her head around, fell sprawling into the melted slush. The haze of smoke choked her. The air rippled like cloth in the heat, made formless shadows of the ring of people. Still, they didn't see her. Perhaps she had died, or fallen in truth into a world of devils. She couldn't feel her wounds, only her weakness. Nothing seemed real. Certainly not the man standing over her. Not a man. A Chert. "You," she whispered. He stood too close to the fire and should have been scorched, but wasn't. His single eye glittered in a face seamed with blue scars. The last time she'd seen him, he had killed her father.
"Vasilisa Petrovna," said the Chert, called Medved.
Vasya lurched to her feet, caught between the devil and the fire.
"No, you're not here. You cannot be here."
He did not answer in words, but caught her chin in his hand, tilted her face up to his. The lid of his missing eye was sewn shut. His thick fingers smelled of carrion and hot metal and were quite real. He grinned down at her.
"No?"
She wrenched back, wild-eyed. There was blood from her split lip on his fingers. He licked it off and added, confidingly,
"Tell me, how long do you think your newfound power will avail you?"
He cast an appraising eye upon the mob.
"They are going to tear you to pieces." "You were bound,
Vasya whispered, in the voice of a girl in a nightmare. It could have been a nightmare. The bear had haunted her dreams since her father died. And now they stood face to face in a storm of smoke and red light. You cannot be here.
Bound? Said the bear.
In the single gray eye flashed a memory of fury. His snarling shadow was not the shadow of a man. Oh, yes, he added with irony. You and your father bound me, with the help of my skulking twin. He bared his teeth.
Aren't you fortunate that I am free? I am going to save your life.
She stared. Reality wavered like the air around the fire.
Perhaps I am not the savior you want, added the bear, sly now, but my noble brother could not come himself. You shattered his power when you shattered his blue jewel, and then spring came. He is less than a ghost, so he freed me and sent me. Went to a lot of trouble, really.
The single eye slid over her skin, and he pursed his lips.
No accounting for taste.
No, was all she could manage. He would not. She was going to be sick from terror and shock, from the animal stink of the half-seen crowd concealed by smoke. The Chert reached into his ragged sleeve. With a look of distaste, he thrust a palm-sized wooden bird into her hand.
He gave me this to give you, a token. He traded his freedom for your life. Now we must go.
The words seemed to run together in her mind. She couldn't make sense of them. The wooden bird was carved, agonizingly, to look like a nightingale. She had seen the Winter King, the bear's brother, carving a bird once, beneath a spruce tree in the snow. Her hand closed about the carving even as she said,
You're lying. You didn't save my life.
She wished for a drink of water. She wished she could wake up.
Not yet, the bear said, and glanced up at the burning cage.
The mockery vanished from his face.
But you will not escape the city unless you come with me.
He caught her hand suddenly, grip sure.
The bargain was for your life. I have sworn it, Vasilisa Petrovna. Come, now.
Not a dream. Not a dream. He killed my father. She licked her lips, forced her voice to work.
If you are free, what will you do after you save my life?
His scarred mouth quirked.
Stay with me and find out.
Never.
Very well. Then I will see you safe, as I promised, and the rest doesn't concern you.
He was a monster, but she didn't think he was lying. Why would the Winter King do such a thing? Was she now to owe this monster her life? What would that make him? What would that make her? With death all around her, Vasya hesitated. Shrieks rose suddenly from the crowd, and she flinched, but they were not screaming at her. A mass of horsemen was beating a way through the mob. Eyes turned from the fire to the riders. Even Medved glanced up. Vasya jerked herself away and ran. She didn't look back, for if she did, she would stop, would yield in her despair to her enemy's promises or to the death still beating at her back. As she ran, she tried to be like a ghost, like a Chert herself.
Magic is forgetting the world was ever other than as you willed it.
And perhaps it worked. No one called out. No one so much as glanced in her direction.
Fool, said the bear.
His voice was in her ear, though a whole mass of people stood between them. His weary amusement was worse than rage.
I am telling you the truth. That is what frightens you.
Still, she darted through the crowd, a fire-smelling ghost trying not to hear that dry, metallic voice.
I will let them kill you, said the bear. You can leave here with me, or you will not leave at all.
That, she believed. Still, she ran, sinking herself deeper in the crowd, sick with terror, sick at the stink, expecting every instant to be seen, to be seized. The carved nightingale felt cold and solid in her sweaty fist, a promise she didn't understand. And then the bear's voice was raised up again, not directed at her.
Look, look, what is that? A ghost? No, it is she, the witch. She has escaped the fire. Magic, black sorcery. She is there. She is there.
Vasya realized with horror that the crowd could hear him. A head turned, then another. They could see her. A woman screamed just as a hand closed on Vasya's arm. She pulled away, thrashing, but the hand only tightened its grip. Then a cloak was flung over her shoulders, concealing her blackened shift. A familiar voice spoke in her ear, even as the hand dragged her deeper into the crowd.
This way, it said.
Vasya's savior yanked the hood over the girl's charred hair, hiding everything except her feet. The crush of people hid them. Most people were trying not to be trampled. It was too dark to see her red footprints. Behind her, the bear's voice rose, savage now.
There! There!
But even he could not guide a crowd in such confusion. Sasha and Dmitri and the Grand Prince's riders had finally arrived, had won their way through to the pyre, shouting. They tore the burning logs away, swearing as they scorched their hands. One man caught fire and shrieked. All around Vasya, people were surging, fleeing, crying out that they had seen the witch's ghost, that they had seen the witch herself escaped from the fire. No one remarked a skinny girl stumbling in a cloak. Her brother's voice soared over the din. She thought she heard the strident tones of Dmitri Ivanovich. The crowd surged backward from the riders.
I must go to my brother, Vasya thought,
but she could not bring herself to turn. Her every sense was bent on escape, and somewhere at her back was the bear. The hand on her arm continued to drag her along.
Come, said that familiar voice. Hurry.
Vasya lifted her head, stared uncomprehending into Varvara's grim, bruised face.
How did you know? She whispered.
A message, said Varvara jerkily, still dragging her. She didn't understand.
Maria, Vasya managed. Are Olga and Maria
alive? Said Varvara, and Vasya sagged in gratitude, unhurt. Come. She pulled Vasya on, half carrying her through the retreating crowd.
You have to leave the city.
Leave? Vasya whispered. How? I have not...
Soloveï.
She could not form the word. Grief would take the last of her strength.
You do not need the horse, said Varvara, voice hard. Come.
Vasya said nothing more. She was fighting a desperate battle to stay conscious. The ends of her ribs ground together. Her bare feet didn't hurt anymore, numbed on the ice, but they didn't work very well either, and so she stumbled and stumbled again, until Varvara's arm was the only thing keeping her from falling. The crowd churned behind them, scattering under the whips of Dmitri's men-at-arms. A voice called to Varvara, asking if the girl was sick, and Vasya felt a new bolt of terror. Varvara returned a cool explanation of a niece who'd fainted with the bloodletting, and all the while her hand made more bruises on Vasya's arm as she dragged her up from the riverbank and into the darkness of the sapling woods that grew beside the posad. Vasya tried to understand what was happening. Varvara halted abruptly near an oak sapling, bare with the end of winter. Polunochnitsa, she said to the dark. Vasya knew a person, a devil, called Polunochnitsa, Lady Midnight. But what could her sister's body servant know of? The bear loomed out of the shadows, firelight striping his face. Vasya wrenched back. Varvara followed her gaze, her eyes darting into the dark like a blind woman's. "Do you think I'd lose you in this?" the bear demanded, half angry, half amused. "You reek of terror. I could follow that anywhere." Varvara could not see him, but her hand tightened convulsively on Vasya's arm. Vasya realized that she had heard him. "Eat her," Varvara breathed. "Here. Midnight." The voices of the dispersing mob filtered up from the river below. The bear shot Varvara a speculative look. "You're the other one, aren't you? I forgot the old woman had twins. How did you contrive to live so long?" Vasya thought the words should make some kind of sense, but understanding slipped away before she could seize it. To Vasya, the bear added, "She means to send you through midnight. I wouldn't if I were you. You will die there, just as surely as in the fire." The voices of the crowd came closer as the people cut through the woods back to the posad. In moments, someone would see them, and then torches threw flickers of light through the scraggly trees. A man caught sight of the two women. "What are you doing skulking there?" "Girls," said another voice. "Look at them, all alone. I could have a girl after watching that." "You can die at their hands or you can come with me now," the bear said to Vasya. "It is all one to me. I will not ask again." One of Vasya's eyes was swollen shut, the other blurred. Perhaps that had made her slow to pick out a fourth person, watching from the shadows. This person had skin that was violet black, and her hair was pale, blowing white across eyes like two stars. She was looking from the women to the bear and said not a word. This was the demon called Midnight. "I do not understand," Vasya whispered. She stood frozen between Varvara, who had kept secrets, and the bear, who offered poisonous safety. Beyond them, silent, stood Lady Midnight. At the demon's back, the woods seemed to have changed. They grew thicker, wilder, darker. Varvara said, low and fierce in Vasya's ear, "What do you see?" "The bear," Vasya breathed, "and the demon called Midnight, and a darkness. There is darkness behind her, such darkness." She was shaking from head to foot. "Run into the dark," Varvara whispered to Vasya. "That was the message I had, and the promise. Touch the oak sapling and run into the dark. That is the road from here to the oak tree by the lake. The road through midnight opens every night to those with eyes to see. There will be refuge for you by the lake. Hold it in your mind. A stretch of water, shining, with a great oak that grows at the bow curve of its shore. Run into the dark and be brave." Whom to trust? The voices of men were growing louder. Their crunching footsteps broke into a run. Her only choices were fire or darkness or the devil in between. "Go! Go!" shouted Varvara. She placed Vasya's bloody palm on the bark and shoved. Vasya found herself stumbling forward. The darkness loomed up, and then the bear's hand closed about her arm, an instant before the night swallowed her. She was spun to face him, her numb feet clumsy and scraping on the snow. "Go into the darkness," he breathed, "and you will die." She had no words, no courage, no defiance left. She made no answer at all. The only thing that drove her to gather all her strength and wrench away from him, fling herself into the night, was the desire to get away from him, from the noise, from the smell of fire. She broke his grip and hurled herself into the dark. Instantly, the lights and the noise of Moscow were swallowed up. She was in a forest all alone, beneath an unsullied sky. She took one step forward, and then another. And then she tripped, fell to her knees, and could not muster the strength to rise. The last thing she heard was a half-familiar voice.
Dead, just like that? Well, perhaps the old woman was wrong.
Behind her, somewhere, it seemed the bear was laughing again. And then Vasya lay still, unconscious. In the true world, the bear's breath hissed between his teeth, still with that edge of angry laughter. He said to Varvara,
Well, you have killed her. I didn't even need to break my word to my brother. I thank you for that.
Varvara said nothing. The Aether's greatest power is his knowledge of the desires and weaknesses of men. Varvara's mother had taught her much of the ways of Certi. Varvara had tried to forget what she knew. What did it matter? She had not the eyes to see them, as her sister liked to remind her. But now the Aether was free, and her mother and her sister were gone. Two young men came stumbling up, drunk. In their eyes was a hungry light.
Well, you're old and you're ugly, said one, but you'll serve.
Without a word, Varvara kicked the first man between the legs, put a hard shoulder into the second. They fell yelping to the snow. She heard the bear's sigh of satisfaction. Above all, her mother had said, he is a lover of armies, of battles, and of violence. Holding her skirts, Varvara ran back to the lights, the chaos of the posad, and thence up the hill of the Kremlin. As she ran, she heard the bear's voice in her ears, though he had made no move to follow her.
I must thank you again, No Eyes, that the little witch is dead, and my promise is unbroken. Don't thank me yet, Varvara whispered between clenched teeth. Not yet.
Part 2 Chapter 5 Temptation. The cage collapsed in a shower of sparks, just as Sasha and Dmitri battered through the ring of people and began to break the fire apart with their smoldering spear hafts. The chaos rose to a fever pitch. In the confusion, Konstantin Nikonovich slipped away, hood drawn up over the deep gold of his hair. The air was hazed with smoke. The maddened crowd jostled him, not knowing who he was. By the time the men had scattered the logs of the fire, Konstantin had passed through the posad unremarked, was making his soft-footed way back to the monastery. She didn't even deny her guilt, he thought, hurrying through the half-frozen slush. She had set fire to Moscow. It was the people's righteous wrath that had swept her up. What blame could attach to him, a holy man? She was dead. He'd taken the full measure of his vengeance. She had been 17 years old. He barely made it to his cell and shut the door before he broke into a fit of sobbing laughter. He laughed at all those nodding, adoring, snarling faces out in Moscow, taking every word of his as gospel. Laughed at the memory of her face, the fear in her eyes. He even laughed at the icons on the wall, their rigidity and their silence. Then he found his laughter turning to tears. Sounds of anguish tore from his throat, quite against his will, until he had to thrust a fist into his mouth to muffle the noise. She was dead. It had been easy in the end. Perhaps the demon, the witch, the goddess, had only existed in his mind. He tried to master himself. The people had been as clay in his hands, softened as they were in the heat of Moscow's fire. It would not always be so easy. If Dmitri Ivanovich discovered that Konstantin had raised the mob, He would see him as a threat to his authority, at least, if not the murderer of his cousin. Constantine did not know if his new made influence would be enough to counter the Grand Prince's wrath. He was so busy weeping, pacing, thinking, and trying not to think that he failed to notice the shadow on the wall until it spoke.
"Crying like a maiden," murmured a voice, "on tonight of all nights. What are you doing, Konstantin Nikonovich?"
Konstantin leaped back with a sound not far from a scream.
"It is you," he said,
breathing like a child afraid of the dark, and then,
"No,"
and finally, "Where are you?"
"Here," said the voice.
Konstantin twisted round, but saw only his own shadow, cast by the lamp.
"No, here."
This time, the voice seemed to come from his icon of the Mother of God. The woman beneath the gold icon cover leered at him. She was not the Virgin at all, but Vasya, with her red-black hair shaken loose, her face one-eyed and scarred with fire. Konstantin bit back another scream. Then the voice said a third time from his own cot, laughing,
"No, here, poor fool."
Konstantin looked and saw a man.
Man?
The creature on his bed looked like a man. Such a man as had never before been seen in a monastery. He lounged, smiling upon the bed, hair tumbled, feet incongruously bare. But his shadow had claws.
"Who are you?" asked Konstantin, breathing fast. "Did you never see my face before?" asked the creature. "Ah, no. At midwinter you saw the beast and the shadow, but not the man."
He got slowly to his feet. He and Konstantin were nearly of a height.
"Never mind. You know my voice."
He cast down his eyes like a girl.
"Do I please you, man of God?"
The unscarred side of his mouth twisted in a half smile. Konstantin was pressed hard against the door, his fist against his mouth.
"I remember. You are the devil."
The man, the chert, looked up at that, single eye alight.
"I? Men call me the bear, Medved, when they call me anything at all. Have you never thought that heaven and hell are both nearer you than you like to believe?"
"Heaven? Nearer?" said Konstantin. He could feel every ridge of the wooden wall pressed against his back.
"God abandoned me. He gave me over to devils. There is no heaven. There is only this world of clay."
"Exactly," said the demon. He spread his arms wide. "To mold to your liking.
What do you desire of this world, little father?"
Konstantin was shaking in every limb.
"Why are you asking?" "Because I need you. I am in need of a man."
"For what?" Medved shrugged.
"Men do the work of devils, do they not? It has always been so."
"I am not your servant," his voice shook.
"Nay, who wants a servant?" said the bear.
He stepped closer and closer still, voice dropping.
"Enemy, lover, passionate slave you may choose, but servant, no."
His red tongue just touched his upper lip.
"See, I am generous in my bargains."
Konstantin swallowed, his mouth dry. His breath came short with eagerness and despair. It felt as though the walls of his cell were closing in.
"What would I get in return for my allegiance?"
"What do you want?" returned the chert, so near that he could murmur the question into Constantine's ear. In the priest's soul was a desperate mourning.
"I prayed. All the years of my life, I prayed, but you were silent, Lord. If I am making bargains with devils, it is only because you abandoned me."
This devil looked as though he were following his thought with an easy and a secret delight.
"I want to forget myself in men's devotion.
It was the first time he had ever spoken the thought aloud.
Done. I want the comforts that princes have, Constantine went on.
He was going to drown in that single eye.
Good meats and soft beds.
He breathed out the last word. Women, the bear laughed.
That too.
I want earthly authority, Constantine said.
As much as your two hands, your heart, and your voice can compass, the bear said. The world at your feet.
But what do you want?
Breathed Konstantin Nikonovich. The devil's hand curled into a clawed fist.
All I wanted was to be free. My bastard brother penned me up in a clearing on the edge of winter for life after life of men. But at long last, he wanted something more than he wanted me confined, and I am freed at last. I have seen the stars and smelled the smoke and tasted men's fear.
Softer, the devil added,
I have found the charity faded to shadows. Now men order their lives to the sound of damned bells. So I am going to throw the bells down, throw down the grand prince while I am about it. Set fire to this whole little world of Rus and see what grows out of the ashes.
Constantine stared, fascinated and afraid.
You will like that, won't you? Asked the bear. That will teach your god to ignore you.
He paused and then added more prosaically,
In the short term, I want you to go tonight where I bid you and do what I tell you.
Tonight? The city is unsettled. Midnight has come and gone and I...
Are you afraid that you might be seen out past midnight, consorting with the wicked? Well, leave that to me.
Why? Said Constantine.
Why not? Returned the other.
Constantine made no answer. The devil breathed against his ear.
Would you rather stay and think of her dying? Sit here in the dark and lust after her, dead?
Constantine tasted blood where his teeth had come together on the inside of his cheek.
She was a witch. She deserved it. That does not mean you didn't enjoy it, murmured the devil. Why do you think I came to you first? She was ugly, said Constantine. She was as wild as the sea, he rejoined, and full, like the sea, of mysteries. Dead, said Constantine flatly, as though speaking could cut off memory.
The devil smiled a secret smile.
Dead.
Constantine felt the air thick in his lungs, as though he were trying to breathe smoke.
We cannot dally, said the bear. The first blow must be struck tonight.
Constantine said,
You tricked me before.
And I might again, returned the other. Are you afraid?
No, said Constantine. I believe in nothing, and I fear nothing.
The bear laughed. As it should be. Because that is the only way you can play for everything, when you do not fear to lose.
Chapter 6. No Bones, No Flesh. Dmitri and his men tore apart the fire on the river. Sasha worked alongside the others in the most hopeless and terrible desperation. In the end, a field of smoldering logs lay glowing across a stretch of pitted and steaming ice. The cage looked just like the rest of the charred wood. They could barely tell which pieces had formed it. The crowd had fled. It was the coldest and blackest part of the night. They stood in a field of dying fire, caught between the cold earth and the spring stars. The terrible strength that had animated Sasha's limbs suddenly vanished. He leaned against his mare's smoke-smelling shoulder.
Nothing.
There was nothing left of her. He could not stop shivering. Dmitri pushed the loose hair from his brow, made the sign of the cross.
Low, he said.
God rest her spirit. He laid a hand on his cousin's shoulder. It is for no man to undertake justice in my city without